After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
This podcast is brought to you by the Love Serve Remember Foundation and Ramdas.org.
Welcome to Ramdas Here and Now. I'm Raghu Marcus. I just got back from India a couple of weeks ago. This is the first podcast for this Ramdas Here and Now podcast that I've done since I came back, and feeling refreshed and completely overwhelmed. I could hardly even walk into a supermarket, into Whole Foods. It was like a blast of energy that was way beyond, although very happy to be there eating that wonderful food. I love Indian food, but, you know, anybody who wants to hear a little bit about my trip, I went to some pretty interesting places and so on. I did a podcast and I was interviewed by my buddy David Silver for the Mind Rolling Podcast. You go to mindrollingpodcast.com and you'll see the India podcast. And so I won't get into it here except to say that I'm happy to be back. And I went out and found, when I came back, It's a talk that Ram Dass gave. It's way back when. I was thinking, geez, this is March of 1969, part of that Bucks County series that did make up, a lot of it made up Be Here Now, eventually, the transcriptions, anyhow. So I thought to myself, gee, didn't we already play all these? I mean, I did a bunch of podcasts in the beginning of the Here and Now series. And they, you know, a number of them were from that time. And you know, I'm always worried about duplicating, although you could almost say, not almost say, I could very well say that, especially in those days when Ram Dass was just back from the first time he went to India, which this lecture is part of that, 2.5-3 year tour that he did all over the place, that he might have said, you know, told similar stories, his coming out of Harvard with Leary and all that. But each time it had a different tone. Anyhow, not to get too far into this, I don't believe that I myself ever heard this lecture in this particular way. It starts out with this incredible story of his STP trip. So back then, there was this drug called STP, which was like acid for about 3 days. Okay. I mean, I did do it once and I remember the trip, and it's the kind of thing that, oh, isn't this great? And you know, you get way out there. It's way slower rising than acid. It's not as, you know, smash you in the face right away kind of deal, ego-wise. So the next day, I remember the next day, I was sitting at my friend's house at his mother's dinner table, and she was giving us dinner, and she was serving spaghetti that was, and then I stopped. This spaghetti is like moving and becoming like snakes in front of me, and I went, oh my God, I am still way stoned. So that's STP. Now, of course, Ram Dass He probably took like way more than I got at that time because he got put up against the void right away. Right. And so he was doing a lot of it. It wasn't like he just did it once. He was saying he did lectures still on STP. Maybe it was he was on the STP and it lasted so long it ran into one of his lectures. So he says it was as if the adventure had gone out of life. Everything became dead, flat, void, empty. So he just came to that edge. And he said the whole audience got zonked. Nobody could move. But the experience frightened him. You know, he was like, what reality did I tune into that seemed so empty and dead? You know, what reality had I gone to? So it was not a positive experience. It was like getting at the core of a deadness and a void, like that did not have its opposite, which is fullness and joy and so on. So he got stuck, and we can all relate a little bit about getting stuck on a psychedelic, especially this one. So what he did was, he went to, New Mexico to Taos, and he thought, well, let me fast and do it out in the desert. And he got to the same place, you know, that same empty place. It all just returned where he got hit a wall. And then I guess, what was he saying? He was barely hanging on to the bumper of his car, like there was no ground whatsoever. And he just, you know, like many of us, we've gotten to the point where we just go, okay, well, now what? You know? And in this sense, he talked about, I mean, what he eventually did was he said, and this too. And how he talks about what and this too is. And I remember back then in these lectures that he gave, he talked a lot about and this too and that too. And it's in the way of thinking about things. It's about embracing the 10,000 horrible visions, which is a Tibetan thing, and the 10,000 beautiful visions. And it's only when he said, only when I said, and that too, that the symptoms of blockage got release. And the energy I tuned into, it's the energy he said, the energy that I could not tune, that could not process, the energy I tuned into, I could not process in my system. It just actually reverberated so high, so much. And, you know, he just was shuddering. But when I said, and this too, then there was a transformation. And that transformation is about acceptance. So I love this analogy. And, we can all relate. Many of us who've done psychedelics, of course, this is what happens. And it's only, you know, I will embrace this. I will become one with the stars. And then that was the poetic analogy that that came to him in that moment. And that was the moment when he saw the dawn and, you know, he saw the light, literally. So, I think this is, you know, really getting at what, when we talk about emptiness and, you know, the Tibetan tradition talks about this a lot, and it is about, but it's not about void. In this case, Ram Dass hit that wall, and he, you know, through STP, and he could no long, he could not process this vast energy, and so it just absolutely hit a wall. And it was only when you allowed that to be, did you get the other side, again, from total emptiness is complete fullness, is complete joy, it's peace, it's everything, but it has its counterpart. And the acceptance part of this whole thing, I think, is just a tremendous part of this lecture. other things that were talked about is misunderstanding of getting free of attachments and interpreting it as a way of avoiding life. The journey is about totally embracing life, but doing it with non-attachment, which falls directly into what he's talking about here, about going on this trip and getting stuck. And, you know, getting stuck is attachments, and understanding what getting free of attachments, I think that's an incredibly important part of being able to say, and this too, and that too, embracing it all. I mean, that's only possible dealing with attachment, you know, attachment to body, which is one of the first things that when you take a psychedelic, you start to lose. What else is here? Yeah, by embracing the 10,000 horrible and the 10,000 beautiful visions, you go through the doorway. Once you allow this to happen, and once you do embrace everything, the good and the bad, then you go through the doorway of nature to go beyond nature at the same time as being fully in it. And he talks several times about, you see, this is all a very paradoxical, this concept, and it's very hard for mind to grasp this thing, and it is so very important, which is why I thought when I hit upon this lecture, I thought, well, this is great information, material stuff to think about, I really love this. I'm going to, what I do here is I listen to, you know, sections of this so that we come up with, a very focused, topic and so on. So in this case, it is that. And then I want to see what else is in this lecture. I think the next part he talks about is service, which is, extremely another, you know, big part of what Ram Dass brought back from the East is the, you know, concepts of service and doing it from true compassionate heart and not from, you know, places of attachment, which again, part of this lecture is, you know, he does talk about that. And let's listen to it. I could go on, but I won't. This is, by the way, appreciate you all, the kind of support that we've been getting. You know, we are going to be, working on furthering our digital, searchable digital media library of the last 45 years. It's not just Ram Dass, it's Ram Dass and lots of people and represents, you know, who we are. Coming from Neem Karoli Baba in the late 60s, starting with Ram Dass. And so we're going to have a wonderful, fun kind of contest thing to win a retreat with Ram Dass through an organization called the Urgency Network, which I'm going to talk more about next time because it'll be happening in October. And yeah, so love your support. We need it. We need it to keep being able to do everything from this podcast to, you know, everything that happens with Ram Dass through books, media, just the whole gamut of getting all of this stuff digitized and available to me, to everybody, and me too. Ram Dass, here and now.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Stop for a moment and think about something that you really need to get off your chest. It could be frustration with your job or a coworker. It could be fear or uncertainty about the future. It could be a secret that you've been hiding for years. We all carry around different stressors, both big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever is weighing you down. Speaking with a therapist on a regular basis is also a great way to improve your communication skills, learn to resolve conflict, increase your self-awareness and self-esteem, develop positive coping strategies, build stronger relationships, and more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, Give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, plus switch therapist at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Ramdas today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Ramdas.
One day in mid-morning, a nobleman ran into Solomon's judgment hall, his face pale with anguish, his two lips blue. Solomon said to him, "Sir, what has happened?" "Azrael, the angel of death," said the man, "has looked upon me so angry and baleful." "Well, what is your wish?" asked Solomon. "Declare it," said the man. "Command the wind, O Lord Protector, to transport me hence unto Hindustan. It may be that coming there, your slave will save his soul alive." Solomon ordered the winds to bear him swiftly over the water to the depths of Indus. The following day, when his court was in session, Solomon spoke to Azrael thus, "Did you look on that true believer so balefully to drive him a wanderer far from home?" Said Azrael, "When did I look on him balefully? I beheld him with astonishment as I passed by, for God had commanded me, saying, 'This very day seize you his spirit in Hindustan.' I said to myself in wonder, 'Even though he had 100 wings, for him to be in India this day is a far journey.' From whom shall we flee? From ourselves? Impossible. From whom shall we snatch ourselves? From God? How impious. Here we are, were we to flee to Hindustan, here we are. Close my eyes, I'm in the temple in the Himalayas. My back against the wall of the cave. I'm in my cabin in New Hampshire. It's all here, it's always here, always right at the same place. after having been in the temple for many months in India, I went by bus to Delhi and got on a plane and flew to Tokyo, and after a few weeks in Kyoto, flew to Honolulu and flew to Los Angeles and flew to Boston and drove to New Hampshire. And all the time, as all this was happening, it was as if nothing were happening whatsoever. I was staying in exactly the same place. First time I experienced this timeless, spaceless quality, several years back, chemical called STP. I found myself in a silent booth, and I saw the drama of life going on around me as if it were a series of still photographs, including my own life, my own part of the drama. And I had taken this chemical and it had put me in this place. And I felt a great sense of loss. It was as if you knew you were never going to pick up a mystery book that you were not going to know the ending already for. It was as if the adventure had gone out of life. The smell had gone out of the rose. It was all dead. Was flat, silent, void, empty, nothing. And I recall turning to my friend who had given me the STP and asking him who controlled this dimension of reality that I was in. It was total paranoia. Who runs this? Whose power am I under? And he looked at me with laughing eyes and he said, "Mine." And the next day, I had to deliver a lecture, and I went to this lecture thinking that all this chemical would be worn off by then, but in fact it was to last a number of days. And I got up in front of the audience, and I was in a silent booth, and it was all happening like still photographs all around me. And speaking started, and it came somewhere out of the bowels. And I watched with great awe and wonder and disbelief as the whole evening went right in front of me, like I was looking through a spectroscope. At the end of the lecture, nobody moved. I don't think anybody could move. It was as if we were all sitting there in a state of total zonk, I guess is the only way I can describe it. And it frightened me. The experience frightened me, and I stopped lecturing after that because I didn't know what had happened to me, what I had tuned in on, what reality I'd gone to. Because it seemed so empty and dead to me. So nothing, nothing. Later it wore off. Then I thought, well, this chemical certainly is something. I better find out what it really is about, and certainly New York City is not the place to do it. So I went out in the desert in Taos, New Mexico. Took my old school bus and drove out in the desert. And I fasted for 4 or 5 days. Way, way out, away from all people. 50 miles away from anybody. And then at sunset, I took the same chemical again. And I went to the same place again. But this time, not so much was happening. Bob Dylan wasn't singing the Memphis end of the Mobile Blues again. And I was there under the stars. And right in the middle of that place, I was saying, oh, I'm here again. This horrible place. And then in that moment of timeless moment, I said, yes, and this too. And immediately it turned into something else. Immediately it turned into something else. We developed some instructions some years ago for the use of psychedelics, which I later noted that the Beatles used in their Turn Off Your Mind, Float Downstream. Turn off your mind, float downstream. Embrace the 10,000 horrible visions and the 10,000 beautiful visions. Embrace life, go through it. Embrace it all. Be one with it all. It was only when I said, and that too, that I got rid of another symptom that I had. And that symptom was a symptom that I had had many hours in that trip in the desert, which was a symptom of extraordinary energy in my body that was blocked so strongly that, being the scientist that I am, I had, of course, gone to the desert with my brown rice and moo tea and tape recorder. And the tape of that evening, that night, I just left the tape going on the hood of the bus. I couldn't move from the bumper of the bus. I had to hold on to the bumper because there was no land around me. It was just complete nothing, void everywhere. And there were many times I would scare myself. You know, I was holding on saying, this is just a drug, it'll wear off, it'll go away. I mean, just because I'm away from everybody, it's all right. And I'd look and there'd just be big chasms of nothing everywhere. But the interesting thing about the tape, since I never said anything all night long, yet the tape is not blank. The tape is full of a sound that sounds very much like this. Maybe 6 hours of that. And what that was energy that I had tuned in on that I could not pass through my system. It was as if I had pushed a receiver button, and so a lot of energy came in, but then I didn't know what to do with it. And I couldn't do it, I just could sit in a kind of a shaking state. But then I noticed that when I said yes and this too, I will embrace this, I will become one with the stars. And then I saw that false light of dawn before the sun, that early light. And I went through my whole trip about light and about the Hebrew tradition and about each man must have his light and about keeping the light going in the tabernacle and the inner light. And for the first time in that moment, I embraced my own tradition of Judaism. I saw my tradition as part of a heritage, part of a truth, part of something that I was involved with. In a way, digress to tell all of this because we have been discussing a great deal about getting free of attachment to life. And last evening we talked about the misunderstanding of getting free of attachment and interpreting it somehow as a way of avoiding life. While in fact the journey is one of totally embracing life, but doing it with complete non-attachment. This may seem paradoxical to you until you have meditated long about the matter. There is a line from Hakuin's poem, Zazen Wasun, the Japanese process of performing Zazen. Says, when you understand that thought is the thought of the thoughtless, your singing and dancing is no other than the voice of the Dharma. Your singing and dancing in life is no other than the path to enlightenment. That everything you're doing in life is part of an extraordinarily beautiful divine dance. And in a way, it's only by embracing the 10,000 horrible visions and the 10,000 beautiful visions that you go through the doorway of nature to go beyond nature at the same time as being fully in it. All sound paradoxical? I'm of a sect which is the sect of servants. My name is Ram Das. Das means servant, and Ram is an incarnation of God. Now, coming from a middle-class family in Boston, we've had servant problems. I mean, how do you keep a good retainer? How do you keep a good worker? Somebody who will clean up the house, clean the dishes, be friendly, be happy, be paid as little as possible, keep their place, eat in the kitchen, have their own personal life, but don't let it intrude. It's all right for Thursday nights off and every other Sunday. That was the world I grew up in about service. And interminably, my mother used to discuss on the phone the servant problem. And then there was a movie I recall seeing called The Servant. A movie in which the servant, with his exquisite intellect, controls the master and ultimately destroys him. And it had, in a way, the essence of the Western model of servant and master. That is, the role of competition, power struggle. Servant gets as much as he can from the master, and the master gives as little as he can to the servant while getting as much as he can from the servant. How strange I should end up as a servant in a servant sect, thinking all those things. The model of the servant is Hanuman. Hanuman is a monkey. This is a Western representation of Hanuman. Hanuman is in the story of the Ramayana. And in this story, Ram, who is God, has been sent off to the jungle with his wife and his brother for 14 years. And the wicked Ravana wishes to get the wife, since she is the perfect wife. They have the perfect marriage. Every girl in India always wants to be Sita. And every marriage ceremony has the symbology of Sita and Ram in it. And so he goes to a magician, and the magician makes herself into a deer that's made of jewels. And Sita looks at the deer and she says to Ram, "Would you get that for me and let me have it as a pet?" And Ram goes off to get it for Sita. And while he's gone, the bad Ravana comes in the form of a holy man, and he spirits Sita away. And he takes her to an island, and he holds her captive there because she won't make it with him, because she's very pure. And he says he's going to kill her, and she says the sooner the better, because then she'll be reunited with God, who's her husband. And it's a very complicated story, because the bad guy is really a good guy just fulfilling a bad incarnation, and he's hoping he'll be killed by Ram. That's one of the reasons for stealing Sita, because if you get killed by God, you immediately become enlightened. So it's not a simple story by any means. And Ram is quite uptight in his incarnation. See, it's this funny level business in these stories is very important, by the way. I'm not just passing the time. Well, I am. How do you like that? Thank you. There's one point, and this is all, it all comes together somewhere in my head. I hope it will in yours. At one point in the story, Ram is out in the woods, and he meets these Nagas, these naked ascetics, and they say to him, gee, Ram, you've got to help us out, because the demons are really bugging us, and we can't do our meditation. And you're God, would you get rid of the demons first? Now, Ram is God, but he's also in an incarnation. It's like Christ saying to his mother, don't bother me, woman, don't bug me, it's not my time yet. No. I mean, I'm just a carpenter. So Ram says, I can't, and he says, I'll go to see my guru and see if I can get a mantra that will zonk the demons, that will wipe out the demons. So he travels many days and he comes to his guru and he says to the guru, he bows down at the feet of the guru and the guru bows down at his feet and everybody's bowing to everybody else since there's all these levels going. Since the guru spends all his time worshipping Ram and Ram spends all his time honoring the guru. See, that's the trip. And Ram says to the guru, would you give me a mantra to wipe out these demons? And the guru says, look how silly. You're God. You know, you are the mantra. You're the demons, you're the whole works. And then right in the middle of the sentence, the guru remembers and he says, oh, I forgot, we're in an incarnation. And you're Ram, this nice young guy, and I'm your guru. And of course I'll give you a mantra. He gives him a mantra, he wipes up the demons. Now that's... At that point, the guru says, you honor me by allowing me to serve you this way. You're helping me by letting me serve you. That's a clue to the servant problem we're discussing. So Ram now is very distraught because Sita's gone, and he goes out in hunt of search of Sita, his wife, and he finally comes to the kingdom of the monkeys. And the head of the monkeys makes a deal with Ram and says, I'll put all my monkeys at your disposal and we'll find Sita wherever she is, because if all my monkeys don't find her, I'll kill them all. And he puts the whole thing under the control of Hanuman, who is his chief monkey. Hanuman is very, very pure, and in a previous incarnation was somebody else, which will complicate the story unnecessarily. I'll leave that for you to delve into if you want to read the Ramayana. But Hanuman becomes the pure and total servant of Ram. In other words, he dedicates his entire life, existence, feeling, breath, spirit, heart, the whole works to Ram. And in every picture that is ever shown of Hanuman and Ram, it always shows Hanuman kneeling at the feet of Ram, touching the foot of Ram. And it is said that Hanuman was so close to Ram that he became the breath of Ram. The breath of Ram. The relation of my guru to Ram is one of perfect service. He is the servant of Ram. and I'll tell it to you, although you won't believe it. My guru is a reincarnation of Hanuman. And as a perfect servant of Ram, he is totally selfless. Now see, in order to understand this, you've got to break through your entire model of servants. Because always you think of servants as egos, as the servant playing the game of servant in order to get something for himself. But imagine now the relation of servant and master, which is one of total surrender. So that the servant's only joy in life is in serving the master. Well, we go through enough trips from the old days of the Deep South movies to have certain mixed feelings about that, of, well, what is that, slavery? Or is that like some kind of suppression of individuality? But the way it works has to do primarily with cosmic energy. Ram is pure light, pure energy, pure consciousness. He's like the sun. Now, there is a meditation that is done in India. I started to do it, but I am not yet able to totally do it. My guru brother can do it. I can do part way. There is a meditation where you start at sunrise and you look directly into the sun with your eyes open. And for the 12 or hours or so that the sun is out, you follow its course directly across the heavens, never closing your eyes, never taking your eyes off the sun. A few years ago, there was an article, a series of articles, about the horrors of LSD. And one of the stories about the horrors of LSD was that some students at Santa Barbara College had damaged the retina of their eye by looking directly into the sun while under LSD. And they had done irreparable damage. This is the most exquisite example of what it means to tune in on higher energy when there is still ego going, versus when one is in the egoless state. The only way you can look at the sun all day long without in any way damaging your physiological system is if there is no you. If you are not looking at the sun, if you are not looking at the sun, although your eyes are open and you are with the sun all the way across. And this is the secret of tuning in on higher energy forces in the universe. It is, again, the paradox I keep telling you about all the time, that you get it all when there's no you to have it.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Love Serve Remember Foundation and Ramdas.org. We appreciate all the support for the foundation and for Ramdas's work, and we hope that you will continue that support. You can go to Ramdas.org and click on the Donate Now button and follow the prompts. Thank you.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. What do you need to get off your chest? We all carry around different stressors, both big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever is weighing you down. It's also a great way to learn to resolve conflict, develop positive coping skills, and much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Ramdas today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/Ramdas.